The third case for oral argument this morning is Sherry DeSmit versus Dale DeSmit. Court would like to also welcome the political science class from Dakota Wesleyan University, the statistics class from Dakota Wesleyan University, and the marriage and family class from Dakota Wesleyan University. For the appellant, Sherry DeSmit is Victoria Duer, an attorney from Sioux Falls, and for the appellee, Dale DeSmit is Donald McCarty, an attorney from Brookings. Ms. Duer, you may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'd like to thank the court for the opportunity to be here this morning. I'm Victoria Duer, and I represent the interest of Sherry DeSmit. The issue that's before this court today is whether or not Sherry DeSmit should have been able to relocate from Brookings, South Dakota to Woodbury, Minnesota with the two minor children, Brandon and Ashley. The trial court's decision was that if Sherry moved to Woodbury, Minnesota, that the children should have remained in Brookings, South Dakota with the father, Dale DeSmit.
Did she move?
No, Your Honor, she did not.
Okay, so she still has custody.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I want to give just a brief synopsis of the facts here. The parties were married on June 7th, 1991. At the time of their marriage and for several years, both parties were employed at 3M in Brookings, South Dakota. Currently, Sherry is employed as the Supervisor Technical Support Services. She has always worked 8 to 4. Dale DeSmit is an assistant technician. When the children were first born, he was working shifts. He would work from either 8 to 4, 4 to midnight, or midnight to 8, depending on the shifts. The parties had a child. The first one was Brandon. He was born on March 9, 1993. He's currently the age of 11. Sherry was the primary caretaker, and it's clear from Dr. Claiborne's report that Dale agreed that Sherry was the primary caretaker because of Dale working on shifts. Brandon was a colicky baby, and oftentimes Sherry had to take Brandon to her parents so that Dale could sleep. Both parties desired to have a second child. They had difficulty, but they eventually conceived Ashley Joan Marie DeSmit, who was born on June 9th, 1999. She's currently the age of 5. At the time of Ashley's birth, Dale did not work shifts. However, it's clear from Dr. Claiborne's report that Sherry continued to stay in the primary caregiver role. Even Dale acknowledged to Dr. Claiborne that he was preoccupied with the house and the lawn and did not spend as much time with the children. Sherry started to feel alone and felt as if she was raising the two kids by herself. She requested marriage counseling and Dale denied. She joined a 3M softball league and was gone one night a week. Things came to a head when she was involved in a Labor Day tournament, and Dale became upset that she was at the tournament all day and then was going to go out a couple hours with the rest of the teammates. At that point in time, Sherry decided she could no longer continue in the relationship, and she filed for divorce in September 2001. Now, the temporary order was from Judge Tucker, and he ruled that the children should have the primary residence during the divorce proceedings, and the parties, mom and dad, would rotate in and out weekly. Neither parent cared for that situation much. Dr. Claiborne, Andre Claiborne, who's well recognized throughout the eastern side of South Dakota, completed a home study in February 2002. It was his recommendation that they be granted joint legal custody, with Sherry having primary physical custody. As a result of his report, the parties did reach an agreement to that effect. Dale had visitation during the school from Thursdays through Sunday. During the summer, it was agreed, instead of a six-week extended visitation, they would just extend his alternating weekends to be Thursday through Monday. However, Sherry testified, and nothing was presented to refute it, that, in fact, Dale did not keep the children through Monday during the summer. He would always return them on Sunday. Dale did not want the divorce, and he did not accept the divorce when it occurred. His harassment was constant. It was with Sherry at home, and it was with Sherry at work. He would harass her in front of the children. He would try to force himself into the home. Ashley would ask the mom, "Did you get the message that Dad left?" He would harass her at work. It reached a level where she finally filed charges through both of their employers, 3M, for the harassment. However, she learned that one of the remedies would be he would lose, possibly could lose his job. She did not want that. It would not be in his best interest nor the best interest of the children. So she withdrew her file, withdrew her charges. Instead, what she did is she changed her course at work. She would avoid the cafeteria and meetings where Dale would be located. In the fall of 2003, 3M, Sherry's employer, approached her about a promotion to a plant that's in or near Woodbury, Minnesota. You can consider it Woodbury or Minneapolis. This is the plant where management, primarily with 3M, will migrate. This is the parent plant. Sherry's position in Brookings was at its top level. There was no room for advancement for Sherry in Brookings. There are additional opportunities, not only for this first level entry promotion at 3M, but there was additional advancement opportunities for her in Minnesota. 3M advanced costs to relocate Sherry.
She knows just her opportunities weren't, as I recall reading whatever it was, whether it was the briefs or the record, her opportunities really weren't, though, promised to her. Isn't that it? When she, by her move, as far as advancements, that was more of something that she and that was her opinion, but that had not been promised. Is that?
It was in the plant, and unfortunately, the evidence, the record was not developed fully in this area. As you know, I did not do the trial in this matter, and I wish it would have been more developed. But 3M is the parent plant. This is where management migrates to. Sherry was moving to an entry-level position there, and there is room for advancement within the Minnesota office or branch. But in Brookings, there wasn't, I mean, she was at the top. There was no other place for her to go. What she was of the opinion from her conversation with her prior supervisor was that the position in Brookings could possibly be eliminated. And thus, Sherry also had another concern that if that position was eliminated in Brookings, where would that leave her, as she was the primary financial supporter for the minor children? 3M advanced costs to relocate Sherry. They assisted her in the closing of her home in Brookings, and as the record indicates, she purchased a home in Woodbury, Minnesota. And 3M advanced costs for that. She notified Dale of the move through attorneys, and he then filed a motion to change custody and a motion to restrain her from moving. A second home study was completed by Dr. Andre Claiborne, and it was again his recommendation that the minor children should remain in the primary care of Sherry DeSmet. The standard of review for this court is abuse of discretion. The trial court's decision cannot be uncontrolled, and it must have a sound and substantive basis in the testimony. In doing so, this court will review findings of fact that the trial court entered, and I have pulled some of them that I feel that the court was clearly erroneous in making. In relocation, the court has a two-part test that they must look at. The first is to determine if the custodial parent has a good reason to relocate to another state. If that parent can meet that test, they go on to a second part and to determine whether or not the move would be in the best interest of the children. Finding of fact number 15 is clearly erroneous. The trial court found the job advancement was only a portion of the reason, and a man that Sherry was involved with at Woodbury was also another factor. Dwayne Wilms is an individual that both Sherry and knew from working at 3M. She did not begin dating him until December of 2002. Aside from Dale's speculation that Sherry was moving to be with Mr. Wilms, there was no evidence to support that speculation.
Well, isn't the judge's opinion about your client's credibility on that issue, isn't that something that can be taken into account?
It
wasn't that reason. She says, I didn't go to move with him because he had moved from Brookings. I wasn't following him. Can't the judge say, well, I don't believe you?
The judge can. However, when you look at the employer, 3M, who is a very large company, they would have no interest in investing money in relocating Sherry from Brookings to Woodbury, Minnesota, to further a relationship between Dwayne Wilms and Sherry DeSmet. They have no interest in that relationship whatsoever. So it's clear that 3M was the motivating factor for the move. In fact, I believe Sherry's testimony was, if there had been job advancement opportunities in Brookings, even with the harassment, she would have remained in Brookings, and Sherry was clear about that. And she never did, the fact that she had a relationship with Mr. Welms, did she ever acknowledge to either Dr. Claiborne or the court, and she was consistent in that. That was not the motivating factor.
How are you suggesting that this be balanced? Because obviously the trial court has to look at what's in the best interest of the child, and that outweighs anything else. So how do you balance that, or what kind of a directive would you say that this court should give on the when these relocation issues come up?
It is a difficult balance, because obviously it most ideal is that the both parents are in the same locale for the children. However, when you look at Fortin v. Fortin, which I would encourage this court to do so, Fortin v. Fortin acknowledged that in today's society, we live in a mobile and opportunity society. After the divorce, a new family unit is created. And in this situation, that new family unit is Ashley, Brandon, and Sherry. The court must look at what would be most advantageous, not only for the individuals of that unit, but that unit as a whole. They must look how the members relate to one another and how they function with one another. And if it's in the best interest, and here's where they weigh that, if it's in the best interest of those children to keep that unit as a whole, that prevails over the non-custodial parent's privilege to visitation. In fact, that's what Dr. Claiborne said. It was more emotionally detrimental for Brandon to be separated from his mother than the move. I can't tell you how many times that was repeated by Dr. Claiborne, several times throughout his testimony and in his report. And not once did that even, it wasn't even mentioned in the trial court's findings of fact.
When you read between the lines on some of these cases that are raised, and we've had a couple recently on the mm-hmm. this same issue, you almost get the impression that the trial court judges are saying, you know, what's in the best interest of these children is that you all stay in this community. And so they direct the decision such that the encouragement is that all the parents both stay in that community, because that's where the kids are. They have friends, they have extended family, they don't have to change schools, and the whole gamut of the things that are hard on children, not only the divorce, but then the uprooting from what they're accustomed to and what their stability is. So is that abuse of discretion for a trial court to do that? Maybe the trial court in this case knew that with that decision, your client would stay in the area because that's what's in the best interest of the children.
I think when you look at all the facts of this case in its entirety, and particularly including the harassment by Dale DeSmit of Sherry DeSmit, I mean, a lot of times the divorced couple don't work in the same place. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case here. So she was subject to constant harassment, 24 hours a day. He would call her at home. He would call her at work. She was having to avoid places at work. Dr. Claiborne felt that it was in the best interest of these children to be removed from that hostility that continued to exist between these parties. In addition, there was some testimony in regards to Ashley, the youngest, was now crawling in bed with him, and it was presented that they thought maybe it was the anxiety she was having from the move. That was not the expert's opinion. The expert's opinion, Dr. Claiborne, was that Ashley was feeding off Dale DeSmit's emotional status in dealing with this all. It was not Ashley's anxiety. And so I think if you look at all the evidence in the entirety, that it's in the best interest of these children to give some separation to this new family unit in the non-custodial parent. You're not writing the non-custodial parent out. In fact, if you read on in Fortin v. Fortin, they state that research has shown that longer uninterrupted periods of visitation allows the parent to be the constant and exclusive parent, which has proven to be more beneficial parental relationship. In fact, that is what Mr. DeSmit would have received here. He would have received all but 3 weeks of the extended summer visitation. He would have continued to see the children on a monthly basis. At a minimum, if he would go up and see his brother near the cities, which he had one, he would see the children additionally. There was no evidence to indicate that Sherry was trying to interfere with the relationship between Dale DeSmit and the minor children. I think when you look at the evidence that Sherry was approached by her employer, she did not seek out the promotion, that 3M was paying money to relocate her, that the sound and substantive evidence clearly shows that she had a legitimate employment purpose for moving to the cities. Another finding of fact that was clearly erroneous was finding of fact number 16. The court found that Sherry was more likely to move again from Minnesota than Dale was to move from Brookings. I was not at the trial, and I scoured that transcript, and nowhere in that transcript did I find any evidence to that effect. What I did find was that Sherry testified that her new position would include implementing software for other 3M plants throughout the United States, but that she would be implementing that from the Minnesota office. In fact, she testified that her travel would be reduced. 3M Minneapolis, that's the parent plant. That's the top level. You move up within there. It's not, she does not have any ability and has no desire to move or opportunity to move beyond that. And so that finding fact was clearly erroneous. There was no testimony to that fact at all.
Even though, let's say that we agree with you on your allegations that these findings of fact were clearly erroneous, is that still enough? Would that be enough for this court to reverse the trial court and say that they abused it, or that he abused his discretion?
Yes, I do believe it would be, Your Honor.
And why is that?
Because I think when you look at all the facts, first, she has met the standard that she had a legitimate good reason to move, just with the employment. Second of all, she also had the harassment, which was another good reason for her to move, not only for her, but for the children. It would remove the children from the constant hostile environment that it was occurring on a daily basis. Plus, Dr. Claiborne testified that it would be in Sherry's best interest. It would reduce her stress, make her more happy, more congenial with the children. Now, there wasn't any evidence that she wasn't, but just common sense, if she's not having the constant harassment, her stress level would be reduced. In the best interest of these children, they looked at extended family, and I'll get to that. But this harassment, I want this court to acknowledge, it wasn't just what Sherry was saying. Dr. Claiborne acknowledged it. He listened to audio tapes. In fact, if you look at the trial transcript on December 29, 2003, when Dale DeSmit testified in this matter, it's not clear that he still accepts the divorce. He testified that, with God's faith, this marriage did not have that many problems and it should have been saved. And so I don't believe that he's clearly yet accepted that divorce.
Would we outright reverse this, or would we remand it?
Your Honor, I think that you could, the trial court, if I recall, had entered an order that if she moved, that she would have all but 3 weeks of the summer visitation. I think you could reverse it with Dale DeSmit having the same equivalent type of visitation that she would have received if she moved to Woodbury, Minnesota. And so I think that's clear, that court could have done that. The trial court made finding of fact number 17 that Dale was more stable in his relationships. There is no sound and substantive evidence to support this finding. In fact, the psychological testing completed as part of the home study clearly stated that both parties may struggle with relationships. This was a red herring that was brought up.
You have 2 minutes.
Thank you. This was a red herring. Sherry's relationships were remote in time and they did not occur when the children were present. I think it would have been better off for the court to look at the relationship that she had with Mr. Wilms at the time, and that she was using good judgment. She did have these children in the forefront of her mind. She had been dating this individual for over a year, and the children had only been introduced to him for a couple times. So this was not a relationship she was throwing on them. The extended family. The majority of the extended family in Brookings was Sherry's. Dale did not care for Sherry's family. Sherry's family was limited in their involvement with the children, and even Dale acknowledged that himself. Dale's extended family was a brother that had 2 children. 1 child was Brandon's age. That child did not go to the same school as Brandon, did not have the same friends as Brandon, did not participate in the same activities as Brandon. The activities they participated in were camping and swimming, summer activities that they would much be able to enjoy with Dale's extended summer visitation. And for all the reasons I've stated, I feel that this court clearly was erroneous in several of the findings of facts and conclusions of law. And not only did Sherry establish a best interest, or a good reason for the move, but also that the best interest of the children was to maintain the family unit as a whole. Brandon would have struggled much more if Sherry would move than be separated from Sherry rather than a move. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Doerr. Mr. McCarty, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court and counsel, my name is Don McCarty. As you indicated, I'm from Brookings and I represent Dale DeSmit, the appellee in this matter, the father of Ashley and Brandon DeSmit. I want to go through a number of things with the court, but given the appellant's argument in this case, I want to address some basic facts before I get into them, because I think that it's important that the court, and I am not afraid of, and would strongly encourage the court, and I know the court will, to closely review the transcript in this case. There's really three things you're probably going to have to look at closely. This is a very much so a facts-intensive case, no question about it. The transcript of this trial and the live testimony offered to Judge Gienapp is crucial. The two home studies from Dr. Claiborne are crucial. I think by reading those three things, the court will have a firm grasp on what's happened in this family and what's going on with these kids. And I believe it's incredibly important that we truly look at the facts in this case when a decision is made. With regard to the facts, there were a number of things pointed out by the appellant that I don't think are true with regard to this case, and they certainly weren't found to be true by Justice or by Judge Gienapp. And I think that was pointed out during the questioning, that some of the points that the appellant makes simply weren't accepted by the court. The court and this court can look at what Judge Gienapp found in his findings of fact and his opinion. And also, what I would encourage the court to do is to look at the proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law suggested by the appellant, which were rejected by the court. That tells this court exactly what Judge Gienapp was thinking at the time. One of the most important things when I look at this case and where it's at right now before this court is the way I would title it is as a case of an emerging claim of harassment. That's what this is. When we ended up at the trial level, and when this first came up, there was very little mentioned of how Dale was acting. If you look at the home study, and if you look at Sherry's testimony, you will see in both the home study that was done for the trial, the most recent trial, and also her testimony at the trial, she indicated that based on Dale's conduct, she would not move. Further, if you look at the home study and what Dr. Claiborne said from the information that she was receiving, that he was receiving from Sherry DeSmit, and it's on, I believe, page 64 and page 65 of the transcript, where Dr. Claiborne talks about Dale's conduct and whether Dale's conduct is extreme. And just now in this appellant argument, counsel for the appellant indicated that it was constant, that it was 24 hours a day, that it was ongoing, that it's more than any person could bear. Dr. Claiborne testified that it was not anything out of the ordinary. It was not out of whack with what he had seen, and was not out of the ordinary at all with regard to Dale's personality. Now, you put that in context with the basis that Sherry brought before the court, first of all, for this move. She didn't come forward to the court with this motion nor notify Dale and say, the reason I'm moving is because of your conduct. She said, I'm moving because of my job. And again, there's two things she doesn't mention when she says she's going to move. She doesn't mention Dale's conduct, and she doesn't mention her boyfriend. Those are the two things that she doesn't mention. We go to trial on this. She says she's going to move. They do an updated home study. At the home study, she reports to Dr. Claiborne what Dale has done. She's not happy with Dale, but also says she wouldn't move based on the conduct. She testifies at trial consistent with that. The judge listens to all the live testimony, enters his ruling, and then that is the point that Sherry DeSmet says that Dale is terrible and that's the reason that we're moving. And that's why I say this is truly a case of emerging, what they claim to be emerging harassment. Those facts, it is critically important that the court understand the facts presented to the trial court. And what I would encourage the court to do, and this is a little bit, I don't know if it's backwards or not, but it, to some degree, the way the issues have been briefed, it's backwards. What I would ask the court to do is do this. Look first at the motion to reopen or reconsider. Look at that issue and decide whether Judge Genap was wrong on the motion to reopen and reconsider. Because if you find, as Judge Genap did, that there was no reason to reopen or reconsider this case, much of the facts asserted in the appellant's brief would not be before this court. Those facts were not presented to Judge Genap through live testimony. They were presented only through the motion to reopen or reconsider. And they weren't new issues. They were simply more facts. Essentially, what the appellant did in this case was she looked at the judge's decision and then changed her position for why she was moving to try to change the decision of the court. And the court said no. So I would strongly encourage this court to look first at the motion to reopen and reconsider. Decide that issue, and then move on and look at the facts that were actually before the trial court at that time. I think if that's done, there's no question that there was no abuse of discretion in this case, or that any of the findings of fact or conclusions of law were clearly erroneous. I think it is an attempt to move this case in a direction that you, to at least try to create a claim that this court could potentially reverse on. But those facts were not before the trial court. Another thing I'll point out with regard to the motion to reopen or reconsider is you look at the briefs of the appellant. She submitted the appellant's brief and the appellant's reply brief. On the motion to reopen and reconsider, in both briefs, there's approximately one page and one paragraph addressed to that motion. And there is no legal argument made at all. What that tells me is, again, that motion was made to try to put facts before this court that weren't submitted. If there was truly a basis for the motion to reopen or reconsider, they would have spent substantially more time trying to deal with it, but they did not. And then when you look at the facts that are submitted in the appellant's brief, they come right from the motion to reopen or reconsider. So I think it's critically important that the court recognize how this case is moving and actually look at the facts that were presented before Judge Genap. It was briefly discussed during the appellant's argument, the standard of review in this case, and it is the abuse of discretion and whether any of the findings of fact were clearly erroneous. One of the things I think this court could do, particularly in this area, to give people certainty that deal with this situation, because it is truly a problematic situation for kids growing up in families like this, is to make it clear that the trial courts are going to decide this issue. That they are the ones that are in the place to listen to the facts and to judge the credibility of the witnesses and decide these cases based on all the facts before them when both parties have the opportunity to confront and cross-examine the witnesses that get on the stand. And this court certainly, I think, could do much in that area by emphasizing the fact that the trial court in this case listened to all the testimony offered by both parties and made a decision based on the best interests of the children. And that decision should be upheld because that's consistent with the facts that were presented.
But didn't the trial court, in a way, do roundabout what they probably couldn't have done face up, which is to require the mother to stay in the community in order to get custody?
I think it can be looked at that way. But quite honestly, Justice Meyer-Henry, in preparing for this oral argument, I went back and looked closely at Judge Genap's opinion for that exact issue. But if you look in the memorandum opinion specifically for Judge Genap, you'll see that he looked specifically at that issue, and I don't think that's what he did in this case. I think there's a possibility for that in other cases for a judge to do that, but in this case, I don't think so. The reason I don't think so is this, and the thing that's not acknowledged by the appellant is this, that these parents were essentially equal in every regard other than the issue of primary caregiver, and that's really what you take away from those home studies. These two parents are essentially good parents and are essentially equal in every regard other than that Sherry was the primary caregiver for these children when they were very young. And Judge Genap recognizes that that was because Dale was working shifts at the time. They then built a house. Dale went to a daytime shift that started earlier in the morning but ended at 3 in the afternoon, and that's what the testimony was. Sherry worked later in the morning and further into the evening. What they changed to after the first child was born would be that Sherry would get the kids up, get them to school, and go to work. Dale would go to work early. He would get done with work earlier. He would pick the children up from work and get supper ready. And they would come home at the end of the night, would be a family. But what happened out of necessity when this family was young changed to a different situation as they had the ability and the money to deal with things in a different way. And by the time this came before the court, they were essentially equal in terms of being able to care for these children. Dr. Claiborne is absolutely clear that Dale DeSmit can care for these children on his own without the help of the mother, period. And that's clear. The other thing that this is somewhat unique in is that there are, each of the parents have strengths and each of the parents have weaknesses. In this case, and it's not fun to do, to go through somebody's history and attack them and say, you know, you do have some weaknesses with regard to parenting. But it is clear from the history in this case and the testimony that was offered, and it's clear that Judge Genap accepted this, is that Sherry DeSmit was 41 years old and had been divorced three times by that point, and had a fourth relationship with someone that was a habitual drug abuser, and that relationship ended. She did not ever indicate, when she said she was moving, she never indicates to Dr. Claiborne that she's even involved in a relationship up in Minneapolis. She never indicates that. Further, she never indicates to Dr. Claiborne not only that she doesn't have a relationship, but this is the relationship that essentially broke up the marriage. Now, if Dr. Claiborne, and Dr. Claiborne's not aware of that at the time of the trial, he issues his opinion, but he's not aware at the time of the trial that part of the reason for the move is so that she can further this relationship. I think that would have affected Dr. Claiborne's opinion if had he known that. The reason I say that is because in the original home study, Dr. Claiborne indicates there is concern about Sherry's stability in relationships and her commitment to relationships, but we don't know the extent to which that affects her ability to parent. Now, 2 years later, if she's moving to engage in another relationship and moving the children out of their environment for that purpose, I think that raises a red flag, and I think that's why, one of the reasons Judge Genap said, wait a second, this isn't just coincidence that you're moving to Minneapolis for another job with 3M with no details and with nobody else from 3M testifying about it. It's not just a coincidence that you want to move up there. Part of the reason you want to go is because of this other person. Judge Genap found that, and he indicated that. Now, in your average case, that may not be a big deal. But in this case, when you look at the balancing out, Dr. Claiborne is consistent in both home studies. Dale is more stable. Dale is more grounded in his faith. Dale is favored in the area of guidance for the children. Now, those are the three things that favor Dale. The other things they're almost equal on, other than the fact that Sherry was the primary caregiver when the kids were young. And again, I understand what your point, Justice Meyer-Henry, that they may try to strong-arm him into staying. But in this case, there truly was a balance going on where these kids, although they had gone through a divorce, were still getting all the things that they should get from both parents. My client would disagree that he thinks he could better care for the children himself in Brookings, even if Sherry lived there. When I look at it on the record, the best situation for these kids is for both parents to be there. The worst situation for these kids is to be removed out of this situation into a new environment. I think it is so critically important that the court looks at the facts of this case and not look at it just in terms of will this affect his visitation or not, because there are a number of latent things that lay underneath the surface of this that make Judge Genap's decision particularly correct in this case. Now, moving to the issue of whether it was a good idea or whether there was a good reason for Sherry to move or not. Again, on this issue, I would have liked Judge Genap to be stronger in my position, but I think Judge Genap was realistically looking at the facts and probably came down properly on it and said, I don't know whether there's a... Judge Genap said, well, there, at the very least, her basis for the move is questionable, and certainly a portion of the reason she wants to move is the boyfriend. And you are absolutely correct, Justice Zinter. I think you pointed out the issue goes to credibility. I think Justice Genap, my client, got on the stand and certainly said things and admitted to things that I wished wouldn't have taken place. But the thing my client did absolutely when he got on the stand is that he was abundantly honest about everything. And he was abundantly honest with Dr. Claiborne as well. Judge Genap listened to both of the people testifying in this case, and certainly credibility was an issue. He does not believe, nor should he believe, that this is a move for her employment. That's the reason that she initially gave. He does not believe that, and it's rightfully so. And I agree, there's no way that I can prove directly or through direct affirmative evidence what Sherry DeSmet believes in her head. The only way I can prove that and get a finding on that is to present all the facts to the judge and let the judge decide on credibility. And that's what he did in this case. He did not believe what she was saying. The reason for the move is the employment, which has already been pointed out. There were no advantages to this employment. Dr. Claiborne points out that these children are receiving everything that they need in Brookings and are certainly very well off in Brookings and thriving in Brookings. She goes on to say that the conduct of Dale is another reason for the move, but that is certainly a late argument that's made. And again, I direct your attention to her testimony and what Dr. Claiborne reports.
Now, I've not had a chance to review the entire record at this point. I assume the court had a fully developed idea of what was available to the children in Brookings because they were doing that.
That's exactly right.
What was the court given as far as specifics that was available in this? Was it Woodbury? It's a suburb of Minneapolis.
They weren't given any specifics. Sherry had purchased a home there. She testified to that. She testified that she had spoken to a school but had never been there. And that was the extent of it. She admitted that she has no family in the area, no other support in the area. She indicated that if there was an emergency for the children, she was going to give the school her boyfriend's phone number so that they could call the boyfriend if she was out of town. That was the extent of it. There was no testimony offered with regard to what was offered in Woodbury. I think the essence of the testimony that was offered was the children, and it's undisputed, the children are thriving in Brookings, period. No dispute. What is going to happen in Woodbury? There was theoretical testimony, I think, what could be, but no evidence or testimony specifically what they would be involved in or how they would do there. And I, to some degree, that's difficult to do when you're not up there already, but at the same time, it was extremely weak as far as testimony or evidence offered on that issue. And the thing that, again, there's a number of things that go into one of these decisions, all the different facts that come in. One of the big facts in this case, once you get beyond Dale, which is a very good relationship between the children and their father, is the support system that exists in Brookings. The maternal grandparents are in Brookings. Dale's brother and his wife are in Brookings. They have a son that is the exact same age as Brandon. Sherry's sister and husband both live in Brookings. Two of her sisters live in Brookings. One of the sisters has a child the exact same age as Ashley. The children attended Sherry's sister's home daycare from the time they were born up through first grade. To say that this family isn't integrated and involved in Brookings, the city of Brookings or the area of Brookings, is ridiculous. A specific example of it is this, and I know there's, you look at best interest of the child under the various factors the court can look at, but you also look at it under the specific things that apply, and this is one example. Brandon is the water boy for the high school football team in Brookings because his uncle is one of the coaches for the high school football team. And it's not a big deal, but it's certainly in a kid's life. It's one of those things that certainly connects a child to that area and is something that makes their life enjoyable. And all of those things, virtually all of those things, favor them staying in Brookings.
Now, you have not cross-appealed to where if Sherry stays in Brookings, she retains custody. Is that correct?
We have not raised an issue or a notice of review before the court.
Your client is satisfied, as long as the children remain in Brookings, to be in Sherry's custody.
I don't want to say that he's satisfied, but he is not taking a position inconsistent with that, Chief Justice.
He didn't appeal it, let's put it that way.
Yes, and I think you and I both understand the significance of that. He feels that these children would be better off with him, but he is also recognizing the situation and recognizing where he's at. We have sat before a judge and we have put our evidence on and we are willing to live with the judge's decision. Another thing that I'd point out, with regard to best interests of the children, there is...
Minutes, counsel.
Thank you, Ryan. There is no evidence and there is no reason to believe that the best interest of the children would be served by going to Woodbury. When you do the test here, in addition to the factors the court lays out for best interest, there's a number of things that weigh in favor of staying in Brookings. There is nothing in favor of going to Woodbury. You can't point to anything. The thing that I think that is most important in this situation is, again, the abilities of Dale and the strengths of Dale that are added to this situation that are not present if Sherry moves away from Brookings on her own. Dale's strengths and the strengths of the support group and activities in Brookings clearly make Brookings the better place. No question about it. There can be no claim, I don't think, and the judge entered findings of fact and conclusions of law on this. Dale is favored in the area of guidance. He is favored in the area of commitment.
Your time has expired, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Ms. Dury, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice, I would answer your question in regards to what evidence was presented in regards to what's available for the children in Woodbury, Minnesota. The evidence that was presented was that there would be after-school care. Mr. Smith had talked to the realtor. She had talked with individuals in the neighborhood of where she was purchasing the home or where she had purchased the home. Both the school, the daughter, would go from a part-time kindergarten setting in Brookings to a full-time setting in Woodbury, Minnesota. There would be on-site after-school care for her there. Brandon would also have the same opportunity, would have school there with an after-school site daycare center there as well. She did check through the realtor and other individuals in the neighborhood, looked at what friends were available for the children. Sherry's testimony was that there were more friends available for them in Woodbury, Minnesota, right in that central neighborhood as what is currently in their neighborhood.
As a philosophical issue, how can you say that what might be in Woodbury, Minnesota is better for these children than what is in Brookings?
Your Honor, I think you have to look at Dr. Claiborne's testimony, and that is that the hostile environment that this family is continuing to live in is affecting the children. And unfortunately, the record is not overabundant with all that information. And I cannot change that. What Dr. Claiborne did clearly state is that Ashley is feeding off the needs of this father. And she's responding to his emotional instability. And that, I think, is clear evidence that there is a detrimental effect in keeping the children in this hostile environment. Mr. McCarty indicated that she put down her boyfriend as a second person to contact in case of an emergency. No, what she originally put down is 3M also up in Minneapolis has a sick care program so that if they cannot reach Sherry, that the 3M sick care program is contacted.
But that, in Brookings, they've got grandpa and grandma, they got uncles, they've got, if the mother retains custody, they can send them over to dad's if mom's gone. How can you compare that with some 3M family program, as well-intended as it might be?
I think this court also needs to look at how often Sherry has not been available when these children have been sick. According to Sherry's testimony, there was only one. At most, according to Dale, there was only two.
I'm not limiting it to sick. I mean, there are times when she's going to have to be gone for this or that.
Exactly. And her family is mobile. They can assist her. They can come up there. Her parents are older. Unfortunately, I'm limited because that information was not introduced at the record. But I want to point out to this court that Dale did not take these children to CCD. Dale did not offer to care for these children when Brandon had his tonsils taken out. The reason Dale gave was because Sherry's the primary caretaker. Mr. McCarty stated that Dale is, in the trial court, found that Dale is more likely to instill the religion upbringing in the minor children. When you look at, and unfortunately I had to go through the home studies to get this information, Sherry is the one that helped Brandon through First Communion. Sherry is the one that planned Brandon's baptism. Sherry is the one that takes Brandon
to his weekly CCD classes and assist him with his CCD classes. She takes him to church. She socializes with him at church. Dale's response regarding taking him to CCD is he only does so when Sherry is gone. Reason being, she's the primary caretaker. It's her responsibility. And so Dale DeSmet wants to step up and say, I'm here, I will take these children, but he doesn't step up when it's to help out getting them to CCD. Doesn't help out when it's time when they are sick. In fact, he doesn't even keep them in through Monday during the summers. Dale DeSmet testified that he wanted in the original stipulation and agreement a provision that Sherry could not move from the state of South Dakota. That puts it, she could have moved to Rapid City, 5 to 6 hours away. We're asking to move to Minneapolis, 3.5 to 4 hours away. He wants to interfere with her ability to advance her career. Dale's harassment.
But it's the best interest of the children, not her career, that we are to focus on, correct?
Correct, but you have to look at whether or not she also is happy and has job satisfaction, how that relates with the children as well. And in fact, in her current situation, one, she's topped out. Two, she had to file harassment charges against Dale. The only reason she didn't follow through is to keep his job. So that creates a stressful situation for her, which doesn't make it a productive for her and the children.
Do you attach any legal significance to the fact that there was no cross appeal on the custody issue?
I do, Your Honor. That's why I agree that, and that's why I pointed out to this court, he doesn't step up to the plate for CCD when the kids are sick, and he wants to, doesn't want her to move to Minnesota, but she could move to Rapid City. It's not so much that he wants the kids, he wants to interfere with her ability to move on. And I think that's clear. In fact, Mr. McCarty brought up Sherry's relationships again. Dr. Claiborne stated that after gathering further collateral information that Sherry's past relationships was not an issue. He stated that emphatically when Mr. McCarty was drilling him in regards to those relationships and how it would affect her parenting. What did concern Dr. Claiborne are two primary things. One, Dale's instability and the children feeding off his emotional instability. And two, the fact that Brandon would struggle significantly and would have a detrimental effect on Brandon if he was separated from his mother. Brandon was upset initially by the move. Everyone acknowledged, both Dr. Claiborne and Ms. Perkins, who provided information through Dr. Claiborne's home study, that his reaction was normal. But the testimony through the home study, Ms. Perkins also stated she continued to see Brandon through this process. And by the time they were nearing the move, he had adjusted to the idea and was, in fact, excited about the idea of the move. Both, and particularly Dr. Claiborne, said that Brandon would struggle more emotionally if he was separated from the mom. One of the reasons he felt that it was, in Dr. Claiborne's opinion, if the attachment with Brandon and Dale had been stronger, Brandon would not have struggled as much as he did with the idea of being separated from his mother. So that is one significant aspect that I think the court needs to look at, and that is that that separation would be an issue that trial court literally did not even acknowledge. It didn't even appear in its written memorandum opinion, and it did not appear in any of the findings of fact and conclusions of law. In regards to the extended family, if the children remained in Brookings with Dale and Sherry was not present, Dale saw that Brandon was at Sherry's parents one afternoon after school. He ended up going there and causing a huge scene because Sherry's parents had him one day after school. Can you imagine how he would actually foster a relationship with Sherry's parents in Brookings if she was not present? If he did not like one day after school, I highly doubt he would be encouraging of that relationship. The extended family is something that needs to be taken into consideration. However, the trial court, it was presented to the trial court, and if you review the transcript, it appears that not only Dale's brother lives there, but his parents live there. That's not the case. Dale's parents do not live there. They live in Cottonwood, Minnesota, which is between Brookings in Minneapolis. In addition, Dale has a brother that lives in Minneapolis, which he goes up to visit and could have additional contact with the children up there. In regards to the information regarding the motion to reopen, I would state to the court that if you review my brief, there's only approximately 2 pages wherein I refer to that information. I realize that it's going to be difficult for this court to include that, particularly since the trial court ruled to deny it. But the fact remains, the evidence is clear, even without that information, that Sherry had a good reason to move for job and for the constant harassment, and that the move would be in the best interest of the children. It would maintain the new family unit with this, which this society acknowledges happens, and it would remove both the children and Sherry from the hostile environment of continuing with Dale. There's nothing to show that the Woodbury, Minnesota would not provide a productive environment for the children. In fact, the children are well adjusted, and everybody agreed that they would make a well adjustment up there with the community school in France. Thank you. I would ask that you reverse the trial court's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Doerr. This would then complete our morning's oral arguments. On your way out, if you wish to help yourself to any of our publications, please feel free to do so. We will have 3 oral arguments tomorrow morning and then 3 more oral arguments on Wednesday morning. Court is in recess till tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.